Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome to SciGuys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutford.
Good morning.
Hi, howdy.
This week, we're talking about wrong rhythms and sporadic cycles. But first, a little update from Apple. We've got a review from Australia.
Oh! It's not me.
It's not you. No. So this one is from Lulu0875. So it says, this is a wee review with 5 stars. This is my favorite podcast. Definitely recommend. I've been listening every night for nearly 2 years. These guys have become a part of my routine. Thanks for creating such interesting and fun content. I'll never stop listening.
That's so nice. Thank you, That's Lulu. Really
Thank lovely. You very much. I hope you don't stop listening, because otherwise you'll miss this little thank you.
It's weird to think that we're part of people's routines, because I have podcasts that are part of my weekly routine. Mm. And to think that we're that for someone else.
I don't even have a routine. Load of people,
you know? What's a routine?
What's that?
I don't even know what days are.
We've also got a question. So if you're listening on Apple, head over to YouTube and get to the comments and answer this one. How long do you usually sleep? How long do you guys usually sleep?
Not long enough.
8 hours.
Really?
Are you kidding me?
I get a nice 8 hours in. And then sometimes I get like 3 hours. But quite a lot, I get 8 hours.
Man, I would love to get an 8 hour night. That sounds awesome.
I can't remember the last time I had an 8 hour night.
So the circadian rhythm is a term used to describe what's essentially your internal sleep clock.
Periods, to be honest, from that. I thought it was about
The cycles.
Missed cycles and Okay, circadian rhythms.
Yeah, so circadian rhythm is a term used to describe what's essentially your internal sleep clock. Sometimes, obviously, though, your sleep-wake cycle can get a bit out of sync and start causing some problems. So this week, we're covering circadian rhythm disorders, which was submitted by Rosa Rodriguez, one of our executive producers.
Rodriguez!
Yeah, so a massive thank you to them, and a reminder that you can send any topic you want to us, and we have to do it if you join our Boaty McBoatface tier over on our Patreon. You skip the patron vote, you skip submitting it to the patrons to vote, you just tell us to do it and we have to do it.
Overrule democracy.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how we operate.
Yes.
So, circadian rhythms. Do you know what a circadian rhythm actually is?
It's like your body's rough internal clock that is not really an internal clock.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah. So it's a biological clock. Well, you've got a biological clock is kind of what you call it, which cycles about every 24 hours, about 23 and a half to 24 and a half hours is the cycle. And the clock would be your circadian clock, and the cycle is the circadian rhythm.
Okay, so it's the cycle.
Yeah.
Not the clock.
No. So yeah, the clock is circadian clock. The cycle is circadian rhythm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Is this the thing that determines when your body starts releasing like melatonin and stuff?
Yeah. So it's essentially how your it's the rhythm at which your body sort of goes through the day. So obviously, you know, it starts getting sleepy when you go to bed. It starts being
Mine
able to
doesn't.
Wake up.
Exactly. Well, wide awake.
We'll get there. It's supposed to make you sleepy when you're supposed to be going to bed. It's supposed to make you want to wake up when you are supposed to wake up. But obviously, there could be problems with that. But how do you think your body actually sort of controls the circadian rhythm? Obviously, there are genes with the function to control and regulate the rhythm. But like, how do you think your body actually does that? Like, what is going on to make your circadian rhythm stick to what it should be?
I don't actually know.
So I imagine blue light from the sky has something to do with it. I know that there is, so there's some research I saw recently that was basically saying the idea that like your iPhone or your computer or whatever turning more orange as it gets to nighttime probably doesn't really do anything. It's really? A nice gimmick.
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, but it probably doesn't do much. And I also read recently about how we don't have an internal biological measure for time. We don't have anything that allows us to tell time passing. Which mean the way we measure time psychologically is we infer time by the amount of change that's happened. Now, this might not be the case on a day sense, but in terms of being able to tell how much time has passed, say you watch a video for 30 seconds, the amount of things that happen in the video is correlated to how long you'll guess it took. So if you watch a 20-second video where lots of stuff happens and a 20-second video where not a lot of stuff happens, you'll infer different lengths of time. And that's the same thing if you do, if you run a neural network that just guesses how much stuff has happened, and then use that to estimate how long something was, you'll get very similar guesses between humans and neural networks based on the amount of things that have changed. So we don't have any ability in our body to tell how much time has passed in a given time.
So I don't know if that's, so I mean, that's kind of not true necessarily, right?
Okay.
No, in terms of like saying we don't have any mechanism in our body to tell time. We don't have any mechanism to tell time sort of consciously.
Yes, sorry, that's what I mean. Yeah.
So our conscious mind doesn't have a way to necessarily access how much time.
Sorry, as in what I mean by this is that there's nothing in the body or the brain that measures time passing in the way that like a quartz crystal measures time. We infer time by other things. So, for example, rate of change, but also I'm sure you're going to tell us we're inferring time from other things in the world that causes our circadian rhythm.
Yeah. Because I mean, your body. I mean, there's lots of different factors when it comes, and you can see this with animals that sort of hibernate or migrate. They have triggers that cause them to do certain things. Right. And it's kind of like that on a smaller scale, right? So we've got daylight. I think that's the main one, really. Like the sort of light that you're experiencing. But also physical activity and eating can regulate or affect your circadian rhythm. So if you were to sort of, I think, eat in bed, that's not very good sleep hygiene. If you're to exercise just before bed, that's not necessarily great sleep hygiene because it's doing things that's telling your body it's time to be awake.
Yeah.
And daylight generally tells your body that it is time to be awake because obviously you want to be awake during the, we're not nocturnal, you know, we want to be awake during the day. And that's why really you're able to go to different time zones, different parts of the world and not just stick to sort of one time zone. You know, you're able to say move to Japan and not be on British time. You're able to switch to sort of Japanese time.
Yeah, I went to America 2 months ago and I'm still on American time.
I mean, I feel like that was largely similar to the time that you were on anyway.
Yeah. It was great when I went to America. I was like, wow, I'm awake during the day.
It's also hardwired. I don't want you getting the idea that it's entirely based on your environment. There is a sort of hardwired regulatory system sort of in your brain, or at least that's the understanding that I've gotten from it. It's the suprachiasmatic nuclei, which is a tiny part of the brain in the hypothalamus. And that just sort of, I think that's only job essentially is to regulate your circadian rhythm. So
if you're one job.
It's one job. It's a very important job.
You literally have one job. You're not doing it very well.
So that's what the circadian rhythm is. What do you think circadian rhythm disorder might be?
Take a guess.
Is it when your brain doesn't stick to a strict circadian rhythm?
That's kind of part of it. Yeah. So okay. I mean, if your circadian clock doesn't align with your environment, then you're not gonna be able to sort of sleep and wake up at the right time, right? And that's kind of like what jet lag is, right? So if for example me, I like to stay up late and I hate waking up early. Like early mornings just don't feel right.
I'm the opposite.
Yeah. Really.
Yeah.
I thought that was out of necessity rather than out of...
But I actually do like... It was initially out of necessity.
Mm.
But I actually quite like it. I can get more of my work done straight away.
I like the quiet of the night. I love...
Yeah, the night is quite quiet.
I love how silent it is at like 3 or 4 a.m. when no one is awake. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, that's when I wake up.
Ah, I suppose, yeah. But you're waking up. You're getting I don't want to get ready for my day when it's quiet.
Yeah.
I want to get my work done at the end of the day. Go to sleep, wake up, do nothing all day. And then...
When it's quiet.
There used to be a joke inside of the first ever YouTube agency I joined, which was that they all go to work to go to work for a YouTube agency, and they can't do any work until 11 o'clock in the morning when all the YouTubers wake up.
I really do feel bad for management that like tries to get in contact any time before 11, because it's pointless. You know, if I say I'm doing something first thing, okay, I'm going to submit this first thing, either I'll have it submitted the night before, or I will set an alarm to wake up at 5 to 9, send it, and go back to sleep.
Yeah. That's deeply confusing when you're on the receiving end of that. Because you reply, and then you're gone again.
Yeah, I'm immediately gone. Well, sometimes what I'll do, if I know there's going to be some issues, I'll build in an extra sort of 15 minutes. And if you don't get me in those 15 minutes, then you're done.
Yeah.
You got to wait till later in the day. And probably way later in the day, because I've stayed up all night to finish it anyway. So as I said, if your circadian rhythm doesn't match your environment, you're going to have issues. But in the DSM-5, you can actually find a circadian rhythm sleep disorder. It's a class of sleep disorders in which one's internal sleep-wake clock is disrupted, resulting in disturbed sleep and consequential daytime fatigue. So what do you think sort of defines a circadian rhythm disorder? Like what the sort of, like how they would, like how they would sort of, how we'd build a definition for it.
Your sleeping's wacky. Right. You sleep too much? Or is that not enough?
So bear in mind that if you're...
Is that in the DSM-5? Your sleeping's wacky.
I believe that's a technical term.
So what I'm trying to say is, I guess the question is, what would differentiate just having poor sleep from having circadian rhythm disorder?
Like melatonin being released at the wrong time of day.
Just a consistent habit of it?
So this is something we've actually
spoken about. Is it when it affects your life?
Yeah.
Everything in the DSM-5 is like, if these symptoms are also affecting your life, then it's a problem. It's
when
not
you
affecting
can
your
prove
life,
that,
fine.
Yeah.
It's when the disruptions start to affect your daily activities.
Right.
Obviously. That's what a disorder
is.
It's
so predictable. That's not what a disorder is.
It's the same answer every time.
It's literally disorder. Yeah, that's what a disorder is.
That's like saying, my room's messy, but it's not affecting my life, so it's not disordered.
No, I mean, my room is messy, and I often leave my room messy, but it doesn't affect my interpersonal relationships or my daily life. Therefore, you can't say that I've got messy room disorder.
No, therefore it's not messy.
No, therefore I don't have messy room disorder. Yeah, I just have messy room.
Yeah. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same as anything. I'm feeling sad, but it's not affecting my day-to-day activity.
I just think it means you've built a very good coping model around a problem.
So what's the difference? We look at disorders so we can treat them. If someone's treating themselves, then...
Is everything a disorder?
That's not our purpose.
Where is the line for disorder, then? Is it just bad thing?
What you are doing is called pathologizing. Yeah, everything is a disorder if you pathologize. It's one of those complex things where there are behaviors that are, to an extent, normal. And we actually caught some flack for this, I think, in an episode way back. I think it was the maladaptive daydreaming episode, where people, I think, didn't quite understand what I was saying when I said that there are just normal human things that every human does. There are perfectly normal behaviors and feelings and all of this stuff. Where it becomes a disorder is generally where that is, like, kind of, you can't regulate it, or it happens too often.
Yeah.
Or that thing starts to impact your daily activities and your interpersonal relationships. Like, that's... Otherwise, how can you define... Like, how can you differentiate between a disorder and something that just naturally happens? Because people feel sad normally. That's a normal thing to happen.
People have poor sleep from time to time.
Exactly. People dissociate. That's a normal thing for people to do, right? That's a normal thing that happens to literally everyone. But when you start to do it too much, that's when it's an issue. Obviously, there are disorders that... that aren't just do thing too much and that's a problem, but a great many disorders you can grossly oversimplify to being do thing too much it bad.
Yeah.
Well, but what if you do thing too much, but you figured out a way of coping with do thing too much?
Usually,
would that be by definition not too much?
Yeah, okay. I suppose. I mean, ultimately, we kind of have. That's why we've got diagnostic criteria. Like, I think, what was it? What's the diagnostic criteria for OCD? I think it was an hour a day you spend on your...
It's an hour.
Yeah, you spend an hour a day. You spend an hour a day doing OCD, but you spend an hour a day basically doing those sort of compulsions with OCD, and that's one of the diagnostic criteria.
I guess what I mean, though, is that, like, there are some people for whom the circumstances of their life mean they are more or less able to cope with a condition.
Yeah.
Right? And so you could have the exact same amount of a condition, but the circumstances of your life mean that that's either a problem or not a problem.
Yeah.
And then you would be diagnosed or not diagnosed with the exact same level of a condition.
Yep. That's why ADHD goes undiagnosed in many, many people.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
The way that different disorders and conditions can present differently also plays into that. So when it comes into autism in girls, underdiagnosed, because one, girls can generally just get on with it. The way that I've seen this, the way that girls are socialized often results in them not necessarily presenting the same signs of autism that you would that you would expect them to otherwise. And so you can essentially have people coping with something because they don't necessarily know that they're coping. Yeah, exactly. It's not immediately obvious from the outside that there's anything going on because they just kind of fall in line with what you kind of expect of them.
But it must be extremely psychologically wasteful to exist in that state because you're basically simulating and also then pretending to yourself that you're not simulating because you've not become aware of it. So you're like, rather than just like acting in the world as you would, there is a different way that you would act, and then you are simulating the way you would act if you weren't this way, and then you are pretending to yourself that you're not acting a way that's different to the way you would normally act.
This is why at one point in my life I thought, well, I'm incredibly depressed, but I'm also incredibly high functioning. So,
no problem here.
No problem.
No disorder to be found.
I was like, look, basically my point was when I was talking to a doctor or something, I was like, okay, can we not measure how bad I am based on what I am and am not able to do? Because I've been dealing with this for so long that I haven't had to come up with ways to deal with everything.
Yeah.
Like I've simply had to.
Yeah.
And basing the sort of objective level of how bad I am based on how much I've managed to be able to do is just ridiculous, because there's another factor in there, which is like, how much can I do things? Like, if someone is more able to deal with certain things than someone else, then it's going to, like, someone that's got, say, worse depression is going to present as being much milder than someone else who's, less able to deal with these sort of things.
I have this exact same experience at the moment where I'm currently going through the process of trying to find out whether I might have ADHD because this is not me self-diagnosing. I have no idea. I'm going through the proper process, but I think I might do, right? And I in this process, I remembered the first time I ever went to the doctor for depression, right? But literally, I remember the conversation. I said, I don't feel like I'm depressed. I feel like I can't focus and I can't get things done. And that makes me sad and depressed.
Jesus.
And then I assume they probably will have asked me something like, so are you earning enough money to spend to feed yourself? And are you getting by? And that sort of thing. And I will have said yes. And they'll have then gone, so there's no problem here. Let's give you antidepressants for the sadness, as opposed to, because he's coping and being, and it may not be that I don't have ADHD, but I remember that so clearly, being like, I don't feel depressed, I feel unable to focus, and that makes me very sad. And either they didn't pick up on that, or they will have asked me exactly that question, and that's a silly question.
Well, it's the equivalent of not getting diagnosed with ADHD in school because you're doing very well.
Which is ADHD, I'm really smart.
Yeah, like,
or have supportive parents, or have supportive friends, or supportive siblings.
Or you've managed to get your own coping mechanisms or ways of dealing with it that make, okay, you might be being held back in school from your full potential, but it just so happens that being held back from your full potential is still doing really well.
Puts you on the norm.
It's wild to me that there's not really a better way I can think of off the top of my head to classify disorders and whatnot, right? I mean, is it affecting your life? Yes. Okay, cool, it's a disorder. Oh, wait, no. Second question. Is it a religion thing?
That actually reminds me of this conversation I got into on Twitter once, which was a very difficult subject for me, and especially for me to broach. It wasn't particularly helpful. But what I was trying to get across, it was about racism, and it's about structural racism. And
how much you love it.
Oh, God. And that's the disorder.
Anyway, I was trying to get across this idea of, like, so if you have like a psychosis, or like you are paranoid or whatever, that kind of thing, you're taking in a sensory stimuli, right? And then you're applying a label based on that stimuli, and then you're coming to a misperception, right? So yeah, that's the basics of some like misperceptions, right? And that is similar to if you see somebody of a certain color and then you infer some form of attribute based on that color, like you think, oh, or like a certain gender, you think, oh, that person won't be able to do this thing, or that person's probably really good at this thing. Mm-hmm. Like there's stuff about Asian people, there's stuff about black people, there'll be stuff about loads of people, right? It's ultimately that there's loads of structural stuff and there's loads of historical stuff, but on the individual level and on the collective level, it's a misperception, right? Mm. And it is wrong, and it could be educated out, and it could be therapized out, and that kind of thing, right? And I was basically getting into the discussion of like, well, could you treat some aspects of racism like a mental health disorder because it's a misperception happening on the part of the racist, right? And obviously that was not I didn't quite expect the response I got, because I was trying to provoke an interesting conversation, and I'm sure I was tone deaf in some ways. But what I found really interesting was the overarching sort of takeaway of it is that the way that we're classifying things is that if lots of people are crazy in a certain way, then that's not a mental health condition. It's not a mental health condition because lots of people have it.
Yeah.
And that's just so like if half the population, for example, think a thing, then it's not like just half the people have a mental health condition.
But we need to then think about the term disorder, right? Yeah. So disorder almost inherently would suggest a deviation from the norm.
Sure.
And when we talk about sort of these mental health disorders, like, I mean, okay, we could think about flaws. You can think about something as a flaw in the way that the human brain works, right? The way that, you know, say that we don't quite understand time, or the way that, like, you know, it'll fill in blanks for us and it can sometimes fill in those blanks incorrectly. Mm-hmm. Or even, you know, we dissociate sometimes during dreams, or when our sleep-wake cycle is interrupted. Any number of these things, right? Or we mm-hmm. can get anxiety, you know, for things that we really shouldn't be feeling anxiety for, right? All of these things, you can see them in healthy people, right? To some degree. Mm-hmm. So obviously we need to, when we're determining what a disorder is, we necessarily need to say, okay, is this happening to everyone or just a very small subsection of people? Because if it's happening to everyone, then we can't necessarily call it disorder. We can just, it's just how people are.
A trend.
Yeah. Exactly. And so I think as well, there obviously are other things, you know, when it comes to disorders, there are like quite obvious deviations from the norm. But then again, you think about genetic variation, right? And we only necessarily call something a disorder when it impacts normal functioning. And that's the key there. Like there's two parts to it. It needs to be affecting not everyone, and it also needs to impact normal functioning.
But the question I would have is, do you finish?
I was going to say, necessarily, actually, I just realized that to impact normal functioning, you need to have a normal. So necessarily, in saying impacts normal functioning, you are implying that it can't be happening to everyone, because then that would just be normal functioning.
Yes, but I think what you can say is rather than taking deviation from the norm, you can talk about deviation from truth. So if you have, like, I know that you can get into the epistemology, is there anything true, is there objective truth, all that kind of thing, but you can have genuine, like half the population have got this idea that X characteristic is also correlated with this other characteristic. Mm. And then you can check, and if it's not, they're wrong.
Yeah, but you can people can be wrong without it being a mental condition. And this is so you're saying sort of misperception would be
just
it's
like
kind
a
of
wrong
the,
model in the brain. Yeah.
But that's your basis, right? The sort of misperception is kind of the basis for labeling it as akin to a mental disorder, right? But misperceptions happen in humans constantly.
Yeah.
And that's the issue, right? Just because half the population believes something that is wrong, that doesn't mean that we literally cannot call that a mental disorder, because yeah. humans are so bad at so many things. Like, we are bad at we can't look at a number of things over like five and be able to accurately sort of know how much is there or guess how much is there, right? Like, we're very bad a number of things. We can have a lot of misperceptions when it comes to time, when it comes to any number of things. that's just fundamental to humans. So a misperception in and of itself is, it's not indicative of any sort of disorder, you know?
So I guess I'm getting my terminology probably wrong for what I mean to talk about, because I don't know how all the terminology is used. When you're talking about mental disorder, are you talking about a structural difference in the brain? Because obviously it's not a structural difference in the brain. I'm talking about sort of false belief, the kind of thing that therapy can therapize you out of. Like you have a functioning brain that is able to accurately model reality, is able to take in information and process it roughly correctly, and then carry out actions based on that. And it's not doing it based on any sort of weird things that the brain is just not doing in the normal sense. You've got an otherwise functioning brain that just has a correlation, or sorry, that just has a link between the idea of, for example, blackness, and then the idea of another thing. And that's not necessarily, it's not a structural issue with the brain. Although it is a structure, it's ultimately got a structure in some form between the connection between neurons. My question is that if you have someone with a false belief that's not, for example, psychotic or got like some kind of structural problem, they've got a false belief, mm-hmm. right? They've got a belief about women, for example. Mm-hmm. Or if you have a group of people, like the population of a country, who have a belief about women, right? You think about those and you label them differently, but is there actually any structural difference on the individual level between a mass belief and an individual belief?
But I think I feel like the fact that we have to interrogate our own beliefs, all of us have to interrogate our own beliefs in order to root out the false ones, shows that false beliefs are just a natural thing when it comes to humans.
Yeah.
And so by labeling undesirable false beliefs as inherently mental disorders, you're basically saying that this is a mental disorder, not based on anything other than we think this is bad,
or just the data says it's wrong.
Yeah, you're not applying that to other false beliefs that are innocuous, that are also wrong. Right.
So once it starts affecting,
just once
life.
It starts affecting again, right? And so, but doing that to racism would be really weird, because it is just a kind of normal. It's an understandable outcome of how the human brain functions. I'm not saying that being racist is understandable, but what I'm saying is that you can understand how racism would develop and propagate itself based on how the human brain just is wired to work.
Yeah,
I don't think human beings necessarily have the intuitive ability to create models of accurate models of reality, because the models we build are based on the biases we're exposed to and the rhetoric we're exposed to.
Mm.
And I don't know. It's like we're never really prone to seeing truth as truth. I don't know how to describe it.
It's because those models are never. Those models aren't for truth. Like evolution is not developed a brain that is capable of building models that eke out truth from the universe. Evolution has created a brain that keeps that makes more brains.
It's predictive.
But
what I mean is, sorry, just to pick up on what Jam said there. When you're saying accurate model, that to a certain extent is almost a contradiction in terms. A model is not accurate because it's a model.
Yeah.
By definition, it is a simplification.
Yeah.
It's only accurate if it's predictive.
Yeah.
And so if you, for example, have an idea about a black person, that the average black person might be less intelligent, that might be predictive because that person might have had less access to education, or they might have had less financial resources
or more lead paint.
More lead paint all that kind of stuff. So it might be predictive, but then it can be eaten up by a larger model that goes, okay, well, we've got a disparity of wealth here.
Yeah.
We've got a history of like exposure to lead paint. We've got all this other stuff, and that eats up the old model and builds it into a larger model where you still are able to predict, oh, this person might have had different access to educational resources, or their parents might have been working longer hours because they are discriminated against. So it's still predictive, and it's more predictive than the old model, and is able to take into account edge cases where, for example, somebody might be black and also the president, right? If you think that you have these old beliefs about black people that they are X, then it's not predictive for a black person being the president.
Yeah.
So
It's like what we were talking about in After Dark recently, when we're building like higher definition models of,
yeah, exactly,
of understanding.
Yeah. And I feel like if you've got a population or an individual with a model that is in some either limited or actually is not predictive, but the brain is very resistant to changing the models it has, as long as they don't kill you, then regardless of whether that's on an individual level or on a societal level, that is a mapping of the brain which is inaccurate to reality.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying is that ultimately it doesn't matter whether a model is truer to reality or doesn't predict. It doesn't matter, because if we start, that's us taking our sort of moral ideas and applying it to how our brain builds models, or the models that our brain builds. Ultimately, when we talk about mental illness, I feel like it's slightly different, because what you're doing there is saying, ah, this model is not true. Like it deviates heavily from truth, right? Yeah. It doesn't predict truth. And also, on top of that, it causes harm to other people in a way that I personally deem morally bad. Mm. Now,
well, it just causes harm to other people. I think that's enough.
Yeah, but you need to. Yeah, but you deem it personally morally bad. Like, okay. Come on. I mean, if you're harming black people and you're a white supremacist, I feel like morally you're gonna be like, eh, it's fine. My point is that other people might have different morals based on this.
Yeah.
So what you're doing there is saying this moral, this model deviates from reality.
Yeah.
And then you're almost kind of skipping over that you're saying, also, I find it morally bad in the way that it deviates, or the results of this.
I'm not.
The results of the deviation.
No,
because
that's not what I'm saying.
No, because there are.
I do find it morally bad.
No, I know, but there are plenty of other models that your brain has that deviate from reality and don't predict reality accurately. That don't have those.
That's why you get therapy.
Yeah, but that don't have those moral. that don't have those moral implications.
Yes.
So you see what I mean?
Well, if they don't cause harm to other people or yourself, then they are to a certain extent innocuous. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think that sort of classifying just that sort of improper model that is not based on any poor functioning of the brain, rather like based on any abnormal functioning of the brain, classifying that as a mental illness is almost like kind of lumping in things that aren't similar, right? Because when we talk about mental illnesses, generally what we're talking about is the brain behaving abnormally, right? And then causing sort of genuine distress in that sense. Whereas in this case, we're talking about the brain functioning perfectly normally, but causing distress, and we don't like it. Like, you know what I mean? You I don't think you can have your cake and eat it too and say that this is a mental disorder because of the outcome. But
that's what the DSM-5 does. It's all based on the outcome.
But it's slightly different in that the way that the DSM-5 draws the line is that sometimes these are things that can happen normally, right? And it almost exists on a spectrum. Generally, when we draw that line and we say it's affecting your daily activities, it's because we need to draw a line somewhere, because it's just a spectrum from like you feel very sad to you are depressed. Right, I mean, obviously there are things that come along with depression, but like you don't always have all the symptoms of depression, and you could have a reason for being depressed, and you need to draw the line somewhere. You absolutely need to draw that line. OCD, you can have elements of OCD, but not have OCD.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're spending not a lot of time doing these like sort of little compulsive behaviors, then you're not going to get necessarily diagnosed with OCD. I mean, theoretically you were to have the same, it was to have the same sort of source in the brain, yeah, right? That's the point of saying it affects daily activities. I think it's hilarious because it's an arbitrary line, but it is an arbitrary line, but it's a functional one, done necessarily through the fact that otherwise where are we going to draw the line between normal activity and abnormal? We draw the line at it's bothering you real bad.
Yeah.
And that's basically what we do as a mental health disorder, right? Whereas like if everyone had symptoms of OCD, like to the diagnostic criteria, OCD wouldn't exist. That'd just be how people are. There's lots of crazy stuff that people do.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure. Yeah, of course. No, I think it was just an attempt, my thought process was just an attempt really to go to sort of talk about the fact that, you know, you can have a moral conversation about things like racism or sexism or transphobia or homophobia or whatever, But there's also a way of bringing that conversation onto, well, these ways you are using to understand the world are just also incorrect. Mm-hmm. They are incorrect, and you can defend them all you like, but they don't predict for anything.
Yeah.
And they don't predict for anything in a way that can't be predicted in a better way. And also,
I agree that empathy.
I understand the mental disorder thing. Obviously, yeah. I'm using the wrong terminology. I just mean it's a false belief that has horrible societal implications. But is there a difference between a false belief on an individual level and a false belief on a societal level, other than the scale and who you get to treat it?
Yes and no, I suppose. I guess what I would say to that is that if one person said, you know, this man is talking to me and he's given me all these rules to live by, you'd be like, okay, right. You're believing that in spite of the fact that everyone else is telling you that that's not true.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're in a religion, you've got a whole bunch of people who are telling you that this thing is true. Mm-hmm. And so there's almost, if you put it this way, there's almost more evidence, even though like it's bad evidence, right? It's bad evidence, very poor evidence, but there is more evidence for you to make that decision and discern reality from, I guess, unreality, right? Whereas if you're one individual person and you're having these experiences or having these have this model of the world, there's almost less evidence for you to sort of believe that model and not think, wait, hold on.
Yeah.
You know?
Corey is referencing, by the way, for everyone listening, this trend in mental health work which I'll give an example. This is not the example he's referencing, but I'll give an example where I knew this guy who had a TV show about him, and he had, I think, some kind of form of psychosis, and he was presenting with the belief that John Lennon was speaking to him and giving him instructions, and then he was sort of sectioned for this. And in the documents that were written about him at the time, the psychologist or the psychiatrist or whoever wrote down, I wasn't sure whether his beliefs about John Lennon were to do with him having schizophrenia, which he later turned out to not have, or part of his religious beliefs. And I found that such an interesting line to draw, that somebody can, it doesn't change what the person is reporting. If they think John Lennon's speaking to them because they went to the Christian heaven and has found a way to talk to you, or if you're just hallucinating John Lennon in your head, same thing. It's just how you've explained it and the sort of packaging which you've wrapped it in. And I just found it such an interesting distinction that you're allowed to, that whatever you want to do with religion, but from a psychologist's perspective or a psychiatrist's perspective, they have a distinction between those things. And I think what you are getting at, Corey, is that the distinction is that lots of people are doing it.
Yeah.
Not necessarily with John Lennon, but
just saying that, we'll get back on to circadian rhythm disorders in a second.
Yeah, what?
It was the word disorder. It was how disorders are defined that got us onto this.
Yeah.
But I will say, I think it's odd that a man could say that he is the second coming of Jesus and be sectioned for it, but billions of people could believe that that is going to happen.
Yeah,
it's got a term, isn't it? It's called when you believe you're, it's like Messiah complex. Like you believe, Messiah complex might have other things about just thinking you're the best. Constantly, like David Icke, the conspiracy theorist, he proclaimed himself to be the second coming of Jesus at one point.
Yeah, and it is crazy to me that, you know, you could say, I'm Jesus, and we're like, okay, well, that's crazy. And other people
he was Jesus.
Another people could say, well, there was a Jesus, and he's coming back, and that's fine. It's just...
But they never believe the ones who say they're Jesus.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Because he's got to walk on water.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he's testing your faith. I don't know. But you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I guess you could say, oh, well, we can prove that he is crazy by this. But, hold on. These people that are saying all of this stuff, it doesn't necessarily add up to me that you can have billions of people or millions of people believing in this story that we think is objectively, you know, kind of silly, to the point wherein anyone that claims to be a part of that story, we deem as insane, and we give them health, like we give them treatment. It's just,
yeah. It's a bit, it's and then a bit we'll odd. Call ourselves a Christian nation, or we did until probably the 90s.
Jesus. Let's not get stuck on the fact that it's a disorder again, but there are different types of these disorders. So you've got advanced sleep-wake disorder, delayed sleep-wake phase disorder, irregular sleep-wake rhythm disorder, non-24-hour sleep-wake rhythm disorder, shift work disorder, and then unspecified type. I've also seen jet lag disorder, but I feel like that, I didn't see that referenced as being in the DSM-5, so I don't know. Maybe it's just something that isn't in the DSM, but it's kind of seen as a sort of form of this.
Mm. So many ways to be a bad sleeper.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very easy thing to do.
Yeah.
We'll get into that with the sort of risk factors and stuff in a sec. But advanced sleep-wake phase disorder is essentially finding it difficult to stay awake early in the evening and waking up too early in the morning. Right, so waking up too early,
like me.
Well, that actually no, because that
works
for you.
At 4 a.m.
So you work
it's
at 4 a.m.
affecting your life. Yeah.
So for you,
it's actually beneficial for my life.
Yeah, for you, it would be an issue if you were waking up at like you know,
I wasn't waking up.
Yeah, if you weren't waking up before and you were waking up at midnight, you know, or waking up at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
That would be an issue for you. Delayed sleep wake phase disorder. It's pretty obvious, is finding it difficult to wake up in the morning and finding it difficult to sleep at night. Irregular sleep-wake rhythm disorder is essentially just several short periods of sleep and wakefulness, not being able to sleep during the night, taking multiple naps during the day due to tiredness, essentially just irregular sleeping pattern. Non-24-hour sleep-wake rhythm disorder, what do you think this one is? This one is pretty interesting.
Is it where you like your sleep-wake cycle is like 20 hours, so then the time that you sleep will like shift throughout the week. That's really interesting.
So it's essentially where it's not in sync with a day.
Yeah.
So it's that must be really, really difficult to deal with,
yeah.
Right? Shift work disorder, which is basically people that work shifts. And swing shifts are really bad. So swing shifts are shifts at different times. That is really bad for your sleep schedule. But shift work disorder is essentially people that work during the night or on a rotating schedule. So they can't necessarily get uninterrupted sleep when they need it. And then they can have insomnia, fatigue, all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then unspecified type is one of the ones that just does not fit into any of the other categories.
Yeah.
We love the DSM-5.
They catch all.
Yeah. There's also other specifiers, episodic, persistent, and recurrent. Essentially just determining how often it happens. Obviously episodic happens. Episodic where the symptoms occur for at least a month, but then but less than 3 months. Persistent is 3 or more months, and recurrent is 2 or more episodes occur within 1 year. Yeah?
Okay.
And as I said, I find jet lag disorder, but apparently it's just jet lag. It looks like it's a temporary disorder that may affect you if you travel across at least 2 time zones in a short period. It's just jet lag.
That's not a disorder.
I don't think it's a disorder. But it
I think it's just a natural consequence.
No, to be fair, you could technically say that an acute sleep wake disorder. Because you're not synced to your environment.
Yeah, but if I just stay awake for 40 hours and then I try and go to sleep, I've not got a disorder.
No, I know.
I've just been an idiot.
I know, but that's why I probably wasn't in the DSM-5, and I wouldn't really call it a disorder. But it's jet lag, right? It's in the same sense that you know, my pet died, and now I'm very sad for a bit because I'm mourning. Is that depression?
Well, yes.
Be very similar, but
no, it's not. Obviously, it's not. No.
It's one
episodic.
It's a tough thing to because
you're talking about pathologizing. You've done something to your body which it never evolved to do. You've moved to a different part of the earth in a few hours.
Yeah,
and then you've got the guts to call that a disorder. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I'm quite an early riser, as we know. But every time I go back to Australia, I start waking up at like 2 p.m. because of that 8-hour difference.
Oh, dear.
You've got a disorder.
I've got a disorder now.
Yeah. Well, you're Australian. That's the main
Australian
disorder.
What's our listenership like in Australia?
It's like the third place.
Oh
my family.
Wow, not anymore. I'm sorry.
Germany moving up. Okay, so those are the different types of circadian rhythm disorder. There are signs and symptoms that kind of can affect all of, or can kind of be seen in all of them or just some of them. I'll just run through this really quickly. Mm. It's very obvious. Consistent difficulty in falling asleep, staying awake, or both. Sleepiness during the day or sleepiness during shift work. Fatigue and exhaustion. Lethargy.
It's lethargic, so I'd say lethargy.
Yeah, that's a really odd one.
I'd say lethargy. That sounds lethargy.
Ah, yes, the French. Lethargy.
Lethargy.
Decreased alertness and difficulty concentrating. Impaired judgment and trouble controlling mood and emotions. Aches, pains, including headaches, stomach problems in people who have jet lag disorder. But essentially, whatever. You know how you feel when you don't get a good night's sleep?
Mm.
Imagine that, but
all the time.
Mm. Yeah, and then it compounds. Mm. So, I mean, you can have sleep deficiency, which is when you don't get enough sleep over, you know, an extended period of time. And then you can, as I kind of mentioned already, but emotional dysregulation can reduce the effectiveness of your decision-making, kind of like being drunk. Like, you know, when you're drunk and your decision-making just is poor, it's similar-ish to that, I guess, in that You just don't think things through properly. You don't make good decisions. It's just, I mean, you've been really tired before.
Yeah.
So it's basically that. And that obviously would impact your interpersonal relationships. It could impact you at work. It could impact all areas of your life. So what do you think the sort of causes and risk factors for this might be?
I would say not getting enough exercise.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. Ah. So that's one of them. There are a whole bunch of risk factors. So
could drug use be one of them?
Drug use is one of them, yeah. So, I mean, anything that affects your sleep hygiene effectively, right? So sleep hygiene is, I think, one of the one of the main components other than genetic factors, really. So, you know, having your phone or eating in bed, regular bedtime, sleeping past the time that you usually wake up, shift work or swing shift work, you know, drug use or even, you know, not just like sort of illegal drug use, but alcohol can affect your sleep-wake cycle, caffeine, nicotine, all of those can affect it. Age, interestingly, can affect it. Do you know why that might be?
I don't know.
Well, you sleep for less time as you grow older.
Mm-hmm.
Is that anything to do with it?
Yeah, so I've got a quote here. The DSM-5 did not specify an age of onset for circadian rhythm disorder, but as noted in the diagnostic criteria in the DSM-5, advanced sleep phase type CRSD typically occurs in older adults, and in teens and young adults, delayed sleep phase type is more common. And that's kind of because your circadian rhythm can change throughout your life. Mm-hmm. Apparently, teens will wake up later and also will require, they need more sleep generally.
Yeah.
And I think that the age-related risk factors, from what I've seen, seem to be more to do with just, I guess, social norms than necessarily any sort of physical symptoms, in that, you know, you're more likely to have shift work disorder as an adult because adults work shift work more often than teenagers do. And teenagers would have delayed phase because they are more used to staying up later and waking up later, right? Whereas adults would generally wake up earlier and go to bed earlier, because your circadian rhythm can kind of change throughout your life, which I don't know what the evolutionary benefit of that would be necessarily, right? You'd think you'd want members of your population sleeping and waking roughly at the same time.
No, not at all. You want them because you want someone to be on guard.
Right, if you want wanting someone to be on guard, but you can't have different ages of the population necessarily, because there's not a massive shift, you know? It's not like, oh, teenagers are awake all night and protecting you. And you wouldn't want the teens protecting you. What I'm thinking as well is the way that sort of a lot of primates operate is that they, I think it's chimps or gorillas, they build nests and then they move. And then they build a nest and then they stay for it. And then they move, you know?
Chimps build nests.
Gorillas.
Gorillas build nests.
Nests.
In trees.
It's like me making a den out of my sofa cushions.
Except they do it out of leaves.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Is it so they can transport their babies without them screaming?
Babies are messed up, man. They sleep all the time, but also don't. It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. let's leave babies out of this, because I specifically...
I'm just thinking, because
if you have babies out of this, man.
I'm just thinking, if you have natural predators and you need to move to make a new nest, you know when your baby's screaming the whole time, you know?
Yeah, but I feel like that... Babies are so out of sync with everything else because they are sleeping so often and
that bloody useless short periods
that it's like it doesn't really match up with the circadian rhythms, because do you know what I mean? Right. Like there's only a shift of a few hours is what I mean.
Yeah.
So it just seems, I mean, I guess probably because teenagers need to sleep more than anything. But it doesn't matter. We don't have an answer to this, so...
They're growing lads.
Yeah, as I said, age can be a factor, but then also genes can be a factor. So something like, I think it's Smith-Magenis syndrome? I think that's it. It affects your body's production of melatonin, and that can obviously affect your sleep. So if there's genetic factors or diseases that affect sleep hormones, that can play a role as well. Mm. But also having those, having like a circadian rhythm disorder can just increase the risk of a bunch of different things. So a weakened immune system, because obviously sleep is very important for your immune system. It's important for your general overall health. Cardiovascular diseases, such as strokes. I think it's because obviously not sleeping puts more strain on your body, and sleep is when you sort of repair and grow and all of that sort of stuff. Yeah. So like, let's say you're at the gym and you're trying to put on muscle. You want to be making sure that you're getting 8 hours a night, because otherwise you're not having that time to sort of rebuild your body.
The teenagers going through puberty having growth spurts.
Exactly. Sleeping
so
all the time.
Sleep all the time.
Sleeping all the time. And that's why you shouldn't call your teens lazy.
Exactly.
They're just growing. Cognitive and behavioral disorders, like decreases in attention, vigilance, concentration, motor skills, memory. You know, being really basically how you feel when you're really tired.
Yeah.
Digestive disorders like stomach ulcers and irritable bowel syndrome, fertility problems, metabolism disorders, which could then lead to diabetes, metabolic syndrome, obesity, all of that sort of stuff. Because obviously, like, I think people don't realize how important, like, how much actually goes on when you sleep. It's not just refreshing your brain, it's your whole body. There are processes that happen during sleep that affect your health. And then it can also, you know, result in mood disorders like irritability, anxiety, depression, and then other sleep disorders like sleep apnea. It can have an impact on all of those. So there's also, I mean, what kind of treatments do you think? Like, what would you think the treatment for these would be?
Taking melatonin.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, actually.
Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so there's lifestyle changes as well. You can improve your sleep hygiene. I think that's the most sort of common one because it's the easiest to do. It's just having a sleep schedule, having a meal schedule, avoiding naps during the day, regular exercise, making sure that it's not too close when you're going to sleep, and limiting the drugs that can affect the sleep-wake cycle, particularly before you go to bed. Drugs like?
Cocaine.
I knew you were going to...
that is a drug, yeah.
When I was writing, I literally have in my notes to ask what drugs,
sorry.
And I knew that someone was going to say cocaine.
I just realized caffeine, yeah, sorry.
I knew someone was going to say that. Yeah, caffeine, alcohol,
paracetamol.
Nicotine.
Cocaine.
Cocaine, yeah.
Heroin,
I honestly,
speed.
I wish I'd written down... Meth. I wish I'd written down one of you will say cocaine so I could show that to you. I knew it.
I trust you.
Yeah, so all of those.
Well, it's just the one that you hear all the lawyers doing to stay up all night.
Mm.
There's like a thing about in lawyers or in where it's like some people will like pull an all nighter, take loads of cocaine, then they will sleep in the office and then they'll go home to get changed and then come back in and work the next day. And people die doing that in the law professions and in banking and stuff.
I was looking into this for an episode and the effects that excessive cocaine use can have on your body are horrifying. Seriously. And so... There's also managing light exposure as well. That kind of comes into your sort of sleep health or lifestyle changes. So that's trying to restrict the screens before bed, people say. Again, I think I've seen places that are saying that that doesn't necessarily do as much as people think. Same with the sort of blue light.
Restricting screens at all?
No, I mean, so reducing screens before bed or sort of dimming them so that you've got less blue light or they're not as bright or they're more orange. I don't know how much. I mean, I think that can impact it, but I don't think that the blue light is necessarily the most important factor.
I've read places. A screen at all.
Yeah,
and
I think
the focus of looking at a screen and using a computer.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's in the same sense that, like, you know, playing video games or anything that involves that kind of like mental
simulation.
Yeah. Although reading before bed, because I've read before bed and stayed up all night, you know?
Yeah.
I think if you're tired enough, reading can be the kind of thing that will send you to sleep.
Reading's best in the morning.
If I'm tired in the morning, reading will send me back to sleep. It's happened before.
But you just said it keeps you awake.
No. I can stay awake all night. But if I'm tired when I start reading, then it will send me to sleep.
Right.
And if I'm usually tired when I wake up. I mean, artificial light can also apparently affect melatonin levels. So just trying to bear that in mind as well. But then you've also got light therapy, which is essentially just trying to move your sleep and wake times earlier by using a sort of light box when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah, I got one of them.
Do you have one of those?
Yeah. You set an alarm, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a tone alarm. It just like slowly simulates the sun coming up over like half an hour. It just slowly becomes brighter.
Oh, I have one of those at home.
Yeah.
Why's everyone got these?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, very good.
Improved your sleep at all?
It improved the waking up experience.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not good at waking up. I hate it. It's the worst. It's the worst part of my day.
I'm a chronic snoozer.
Oh my God.
I will just bash that button.
Yeah.
I know. I've stayed around your house and I hear the alarm go off about 10 times.
That's not me, to be fair.
Yeah. I've heard alarms from your room in my room. My room was on the top floor.
You live Jamps like was half, on the, half of London away. That's really bad, Jamps.
When we lived together, my room was on the top floor. Jamps' room was on the bottom floor.
Yeah.
There were, what, 3 floors in this house?
Yeah.
I could literally hear the alarm from my room sometimes.
No, I will say, it wasn't my alarm. I wake up to alarms. I just snoozed them. So it's 9-minute intervals.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
That's yeah.
No, but what I'm talking about is the experience of being in your house and waking up to alarm at like 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And then at 3:09 a.m.
Right.
And then 3:18 a.m. And then 3:27 a.m.
Just set one alarm.
I'm glad I live alone now. Well, I'm not alone, but.
but he doesn't count.
I have better friendships. Because I'm not waking up my friends all the time.
Oh, okay.
No, you are. This is my point. I stay at your house quite a lot, and this happens every time I stay at your house.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But it's okay. I forgive you.
Well, don't come over then.
Okay.
Learn to live with it.
So, side effects of light therapy. You could have agitation, eye strain, headaches, migraines, nausea. I think light therapy is kind of the thing that you'd move on to if changing your lifestyle doesn't necessarily work. But there's also supplements. Taking basically melatonin supplements or melatonin receptor agonists. Essentially, taking these can result in dizziness and fatigue. I think side effects of melatonin could be sleepiness and headaches and high blood pressure and low blood pressure and stomach upsets and worsening symptoms of depression. But they don't necessarily give the melatonin to everyone, because if you've got dementia or epilepsy, or if you're on certain medications, they can interact with those in certain ways. But you could also have other medications that you take, beta blockers, caffeine, sleep promoting medicines, benzodiazepines, sleeping pills, mm-hmm. which are, some of those are, they will knock you out. One of my mates was put on sleeping pills in university, and he would not wake up to anything.
Really?
He would take them and he'd be out, like just immediately out for it. I remember actually, the day that Brexit happened, I think I distinctly remember this. The day that Brexit happened, I was walking around London with my friend who had taken his sleeping pills, but had forgotten that he'd taken his sleeping pills went out to go to McDonald's or something to get a breakfast. And so we were trying to get him back to his place before the sleeping pills kicked in fully, and he would be out.
Yeah,
like he was losing it very, very quickly, like rapidly. Just
oh wow,
yeah, it was wild. They're very, very strong.
I didn't realize they were that strong.
They can be very
strong. I thought they were situational, like they work if you're in bed and you're trying to go to sleep.
He had like the strongest ones that you could genuinely get. I think they were very, very strong. Anyway, you could also get wake promoting medicines, like modafinil, to help you stay awake, and give you better performance during shift work. Essentially, you could figure this out. There's ones that put you to sleep and ones that keep you awake, depending on what kind of disorder you've got. But that is more or less everything about circadian rhythm disorders.
Do those eye patches actually work? You know, the ones that people wear when they're trying to go to sleep and they put like, were essentially a bedtime sunglasses.
Yeah, my granny used to wear those.
Yeah. I just wondered, do they actually make a difference?
Oh, I mean, if you're sleeping somewhere bright, then yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's more for waking up in the morning. You don't want to be woken up by the light, right?
Okay.
Is that not it?
No, I think it's about going to sleep.
Really?
Yeah, my granny used to wear them to go to sleep and I assume they worked.
I mean, if you're going to sleep at 6 p.m. in the summer.
I think it'd be quite bad for waking up. Because you want that gradual light to come in.
No, he means you don't want to wake up.
You don't want to wake up when the sun comes up, if it's coming up too early for you.
But I've had one of them, and I always found that by the morning it had fallen off, so.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I don't think it'd be very good at blocking out the light.
I think I've tried to sleep with them on before to get to sleep when it's been too bright, but I just... Sleeping in a bright place doesn't really bother me all that much.
I'm just lying there very aware of the fact that I'm wearing an eye patch.
Yeah. Well, we're through with that, but we've still got one more thing to go. It's the quick fire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. Sleep disorder edition.
So the quick fire quiz is the same as always. I will ask one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after I finish asking the question wins. What do you win, Jamp?
a good night's sleep.
Please.
Yeah. So, it's the best prize I've ever had.
What is your buzzer? Jamp, what is your buzzer?
Me, 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 me.
Sorry, can I just hear both those buzzers again? Luke, you first, then Jamp.
Me, 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 me.
One more time.
Me, 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 me.
And the question for you, how often does your circadian clock usually cycle?
Oh.
Luke?
24 hours.
Ooh,
23 and a half to 24 and a half hours.
Yes, well done. Okay. You get a good night's sleep.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah.
Let us know how it goes.
Ironically, I won't be getting a good night's sleep.
No.
I have a lot of work to do.
Aren't you staying up till 4 today?
Yeah.
4 a.m.
Well, I'm staying up till my work's done, whatever time that is.
Well, you can text me when you go to bed when I'll be waking up.
Yay! We'll have a little text. Friends.
Oh. I'll be asleep, probably.
Yeah.
I'm going to text you until you wake up.
Before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producers Rosa Rodriguez and Danito. And thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys or find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or here on YouTube and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at Jamkin everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.